Everybody, and welcome to another episode of True Story of Tinseltown or Stories. And today I'm here with my pal and my co-host for our summer series on blonde bombshells, classic bombshells. I'm here with April Vivier, and she knows her classic blondes. And what did I call you? I said the girl who knows, the woman who knows, like, if I'm wrong, the right stuff. But I love April, and I know you guys enjoyed her too. Hi, April. Welcome back.
Hi, Grace. You always give me the most flattering introductions. I'm going to go with whatever you say, and I'll introduce myself as that with people.
Yes, and birds should be flying around your head, and flowers should be dropping. Yes.
Yeah, wonderful.
And you do know your blondes. So it's been a while, and things are good. We were chatting prior to us doing this, but today we are discussing Sharon Tate. And in this, we're not giving we're not going into the whole Manson backstory. You know, of course, we will talk about her murder, but, you know, this is about Sharon. She was murdered by those people. We will get on to that, but this is just Sharon's life and death, correct?
Correct. Sharon has obviously been really, really lumped in with the Manson, you know, family because of her death. And that's how most people know her. But there's so much more to Sharon.
And unfortunately, she didn't get to be much more. How old was she when she died? Was she 26?
Mm-hmm.
Just like Jean Harlow. But, okay. So do you want to start us off on Sharon's beginning?
Yeah, we'll jump right in. Sharon was born Sharon Marie Tate to Paul and Doris Tate on January 24th, 1943 at Methodist Hospital in Dallas. She was 7 pounds, 7 ounces, and, you know, so like a good sized baby. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was described as just being absolutely beautiful from basically the moment she came out. Her mom, Doris, had a great story about how she entered Sharon into the Miss Tiny Tot of Dallas contest when Sharon was 4 months old.
Oh, my.
She sent a photo of Sharon. She didn't tell Paul because she thought Paul would think it was, you know, foolish and dumb. And then Sharon ended up, you know, winning the contest, and you know, Paul was extremely proud and said that she deserved to be Miss Tiny Tot of Dallas. You know, she was just beautiful, beautiful little girl. As you and I talked about, Sharon did grow up a military brat. The family moved quite a bit. And this did lead to Sharon having a difficult time when she was younger, forming lasting friendships, which is understandable when you're moving a lot.
And this is like typical with any military brat. They will tell you the same thing, that you know, it's hard, very hard.
Yeah. You know, and especially,
go on.
Oh, and I was just going to say, especially at this time when, you know, you don't have cell phones or the internet, you know, every
horror,
you know, relationship.
Yeah.
But everything would have had to be done by letters. It just, it wasn't, you know,
it wasn't easy. It wasn't as like accessible as it would be today. That's for sure.
Exactly. You know, the family obviously spent time in Texas. They spent time in California. They were moving, you know, all over basically the Western United States. For a brief time, they did settle in Richland, Washington area. And, you know, Sharon was a very popular girl. She spent some of her middle school years and most of her high school years up in Washington. And in 1959, she competed in beauty pageant, and she was given the title of Queen of the Autorama.
Wow. Vroom, vroom.
Yeah, no, they couldn't have picked a better girl than Sharon.
She's gorgeous.
No, she absolutely was. She's gorgeous. And she's super, super nice. That's what everyone always said about her. She was nicest person.
I have never heard a negative thing said about Sharon Tate. And that's been read, and there's been so much written and said about the murders and about Sharon, I have never once, not once, heard a bad word about her.
Yeah, no, she was such a nice person. You can see, too, besides being pretty, why she was so popular. Then also in 1959, she continues on the pageant circuit, and she is elected Miss Richland. Now, the reason I'm bringing this one up is because Sharon actually wanted to go on and compete for the title of Miss Washington. And then, of course, you know, then she could have gone on to the Miss America contest. But unfortunately, in April of 1960, Paul and his family are forced to move to Italy. Sharon was extremely bright. That's another thing. She learned Italian very, very quickly. And she ended up graduating from the Vincenza, which I'm probably butchering
I
that.
I think it's a Vincenza something.
Yeah, Vincenza. Yeah, probably is Vincenza. My Italian obviously is not up to par with Sharon's. American High School in 1961, she was elected Queen of the Prom. But interestingly, the high school had like a little newspaper, and they would post, you know, little ads when they needed extras. So Sharon actually appeared in a couple films and on the Pat Boone Chevy showroom.
In Italy?
Which was filmed in Venice, yeah.
Wow.
It was filmed in Venice. She also had a bit part in him. Well, I shouldn't say part. She's an extra. In Hemingway's Adventures of a Young Man, that's where she meets Richard Boehmer. There are stories that they dated while filming was, you know, going on. There are other stories that Richard was gay, so that they, you know.
They were just very good friends. And what you guys would really know Richard from was he played Tony in West Side Story opposite Natalie Wood's Maria.
Yeah, no, and Richard Boehmer was a very nice-looking man.
Very, very, very handsome dude.
You know, and she also, I do have to back up quick to her high school. This is actually the first time where she's able to make like kind of lasting friendships. And it's probably because everyone who was at her high school was, you know, also a military brat. So then she goes with a friend and they go to a movie that's called Barabbas.
Barabbas. It's starring, I can't believe, Anthony Quinn. And yeah, it's about the guy, you know, allegedly, you know, in the Bible, they say, do you want Barabbas, who's like this big crook, or should we do the King of the Jews, Jesus? And they let Barabbas go free. He doesn't, he's not crucified next to Jesus. So that's what it is. It's sort of like a biblical epic.
You can't see Sharon in crowd scenes in that movie. Yes, she has, you know, her really pretty sun-kissed blonde hair up, and she's wearing a toga.
Ah.
As you said, Anthony Quinn is in it, as is Jack Palance. And Palance notices Sharon very quickly, and he says, hey, you should go for a screen test. So Sharon goes for a screen test in Rome, and she fails.
Really? I didn't. Isn't that funny? And all the stuff I got, I didn't know that she went for one in Italy.
Yeah, she went for one in Italy, and it never went anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, but Sharon takes, you know, these little bit parts, and I just want to, you know, go out Hollywood using Italy to film and other parts of Europe was very, very popular starting in like 1960. And it's, you know, a great way for studios to go around tax laws and stuff like that. So there's a lot, it doesn't, you know, have the same feeling of like, oh, well, this person's career's on the wane, so that's why they're in Europe. You know, they, like Fox had a headquarters in Europe. And
look
stuff
at Cleopatra,
like
my God, and yeah. All these other things. Yeah, they have.
Yeah, no, it was for tax.
Big buzz. Yeah, moolah.
Exactly.
I read that Dick Bamer, I believe he sent her to his agent.
He does. Sharon returns to the United States in 1962, and she goes and she meets Bamer's agent. His name is Harold Gefsky, and he's absolutely, you know, like, wow, you know, this girl's beautiful, you know, all this stuff.
Besotted, yes.
Yes, he introduces her to Martin Ranshoff, who is like the director of the film Waste Company, and he signs her to a 7-year contract. So Ranshoff sits there and he's like, I have this beautiful girl. I know she can, you know, do well. I'm going to throw her in television parts so that she can perfect her craft. Now, this is obviously like when Sharon appears on the Beverly Hillbillies in 1963. She also appears on Petticoat Junction.
Yeah, you'll see her in a blonde wig. She plays, a black wig, because they didn't want her to be identified as Sharon as a glamour girl later. To this black wigged, very beautiful. When I first saw her on that, I'm like, oh my God, isn't that Sharon Tate? And yeah, she was a secretary on there.
Yes, and she's absolutely gorgeous girl. But Ranshoff is, you know, sitting there and he goes, oh, you know, I'm going to really, you know, build her up, and, you know, she's not ready yet. And as far as, you know, Sharon's personal life, she's dating Philippe Fourquet, who's a French actor. They're engaged for a brief time. Their relationship is described as being volatile. Mm-hmm. I don't think he treated her that well, but I digress. And they break up in 1964. So Sharon's, you know, going, and she's getting these bit parts. She's, you know, she does a copper tone ad at one point. She's, you know, doing a couple commercials. I mean, she's just, you know, kind of, I don't want to say sputtering, but she's just kind of, you know, going along. Mm-hmm. And in 1964, she meets Jay Sebring. Now, of course, Jay was an extremely famous hairstylist at this time, and Sharon will sit there, and she will actually go and sit in his salon. He has a special back room in his salon for, like, his celebrity clients. Sharon will go and sit back there, and one person said that she actually thought Sharon was a schoolgirl. That's how young she looked. But she just wanted to be close to Jay. Jay is described by Deborah Tate as being a very nice person. You know, he's pretty down to earth. You know, Roman actually liked him as well, which we'll get more into that, obviously.
April, can I stop you just for 1 minute? Sharon did have 2 sisters, but they came much later than Sharon, correct?
They did. Deborah is the middle sister, and she came in 1953, I believe. And then there's, oh goodness, what's, I want to say it's Patty. I know it's Patty. Not Patty. But
I think so, it is.
Is it Patty?
Yeah.
Okay. See, my brain's not clicking. And Patty comes a few years after Deborah. It's, they're very spread out.
But close. Sharon adores them. They adore her.
They do, but some people actually think that you know, Patty, the little one, is Sharon's daughter. Just because of the age difference. I think there's like a 12 or 13 year age difference between them. But, you know, Sharon's, you know, she's just a great sister. I mean, it sounds so redundant, but she's just a nice person.
I know.
She makes sure to spend time with, you know, both of her siblings. They grow up loving her, which really isn't shocking. And, you know, Sharon tries to keep them included in her circle within reason, of course, because, you know,
they're young girls.
Yeah.
With Jay, this is just the tidbit that you, one of the tidbits that you have off, that you, I'm so grateful, clear up for me when I do something, when I say something wrong. And I did on my Facebook page.
I'm a horrible jerk, but you're being nice. Thank you.
No, you were not being a horrible jerk. I like when people tell me if I say something wrong, because I don't want to be like a person who's just like spreading gossip or saying something wrong. So especially with you, I totally appreciate it. So you were not being a horrible jerk. Thank you. Anyway, this was about, I was saying she and Roman lived in Paul Byrne and Jean Harlow's home, the suicide home. But April let me know, bossy, I'm kidding, that it was actually J.C. Bring and Sharon who lived there. And Sharon is the one who thought she saw ghosts, correct?
So Deborah claims that never happened. It came from an unscrupulous, like, magazine writer after Sharon died that she saw Paul Byrne's ghost and she was freaked out. But, yes, Jay had bought the old Benedict Canyon Byrne house in 1963, so, like, right before he met Sharon. There's a movie that came out on Sharon. I don't recommend it, but it's called The Haunting of Sharon Tate.
Is that the one with Hilary Duff? Oh, my God. Yes, I saw it, too.
Yeah, and that's, like, their whole premise, basically, that Sharon keeps foreseeing her death. But according to Deborah, you know, and maybe it did happen. I lean towards it probably didn't. But according to Deborah, it came from an unscrupulous magazine writer after Sharon died.
Somebody was on one of the today I watched the, you know how they do the biography on A&E, and they did it ages ago. And someone said that Sharon was very sensitive. It was one of her friends. I believe they were roommates or something. Or they lived in an all-women's place. Or just roommates. She was very nice. And she said that Sharon was very sensitive and she thought she had seen something. So I don't know if it was her or I know Patty was no longer with us. She had died pretty early. But not after. But after Sharon. So I am getting ahead of myself. Sorry about that.
No, you're totally fine. it's a very popular story. We'll just leave it that.
Yes.
Very popular story.
Who knows? That's what we say.
Yeah.
We don't know.
So Jay and Sharon have, you know, a very positive relationship. Sharon did speak at one time about how Jay proposed to her, you know, the first time and she turned him down. I think that Sharon loved Jay, but it wasn't the same type of love that Jay had for Sharon.
Yeah, it probably wasn't as passionate, but they were definitely part of the burgeoning, you know, groovy, whiskey a go-go, that kind of scene. So they hung out with a lot of those kind of star, like Mia Farrow was on that and other people like that.
Yeah, no, They definitely were, you know, going around. And then in 1965, Sharon gets the opportunity to film Eye of the Devil, which, I don't know, have you ever seen this movie?
Oh,
first?
You better believe it. I have, yeah. It's weird.
You know, that's the best way, I think, to describe it.
It's interesting watch because it's so weird. Sharon plays a witch, a beautiful witch in black. And she, her brother, right? That gorgeous blonde dude is like her brother witch, I think. I don't know. Peter Niven and Deborah Kerr are in it as well, so they're big stars. And it's quite an interesting movie. He whips Sharon. My goodness.
Yeah, it's just
David Niven.
It's a very weird movie. Kim Novak was actually originally supposed to have the part that Deborah Kerr had. It's Catherine Day something. Mm-hmm. I would butcher it. But anyway, and then, you know, Sharon actually did meet Kim. She said she was very nice, but Kim had to drop out. So Deborah Kerr takes over the role of Catherine, and you know, Deborah Kerr would later say that Sharon had real talent. She was going to be a big star. You know, Sharon impresses everybody she works with just because of how great she is.
Nice question. Can I mention this? Well, they said Kim Novak didn't want to work with Sharon because she was so attractive. But I know this for a fact because I've read it in tons and tons and tons of things. That Elizabeth Taylor, you know, the Sandpiper, Elizabeth was like a groovy artist living on the beach. There was Charles Bronson and other people, all these groovy people. And Sharon mm-hmm. was going to be one of the beachcombers who lived on the beach. And this is like, you know, I don't even think she married Richard yet. And she was like, no way is this gorgeous woman going to be on my set. So that's not, you know, it's sort of like a Mae West thing, but it's not unusual that people who have more clout, I believe more the Elizabeth Taylor story than the Kim Novak story, because she said she had to drop out. But that's allegedly what happened with that.
Yeah, no, and you're right. I mean, that is an extremely common reason, I guess you could say, for, you know, lesser stars to get dropped. The leading lady just doesn't want to compete with them.
No.
And I mean, I don't know. I think Sharon is one of the most beautiful people to
Me
have ever
too.
Walked the
earth. I mean, you see her without makeup, you see her without anything. She is absolutely, unbelievably gorgeous. She really was a natural beauty. And when she put on makeup, it was like Pazow, but she was just beautiful, just absolutely beautiful. And her soul, I think, shone through. She was not a person who was, you know, like me, look how gorgeous I am, and me. You know, she was just a beautiful woman inside and out.
She was. She, you know, you could see why Kim wouldn't want to star with her.
Yes.
But, you know, Sharon and Jay moved to London together. Sharon was very cutting edge about the fact that she believed, you know, couples, not married couples, just like boyfriend and girlfriends, should live together before they got married. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, at the time was very forward. Now
clutch
it's very
the pearls, as you say.
yeah, clutching the pearls. But, you know, they moved to London. Jay obviously has a thriving salon in Los Angeles, and he has to return. And Sharon stays in London, and she, you know, really partakes in, like, just the London social life, you know, the celebrity London social life.
What is it? It's like, what's that name of that place? It's like, it's like the really groovy place in England. I can't think of it. I'm sorry, you guys.
No, you're totally fine. She's just everywhere. We'll just leave it at that. Sharon goes to every place.
And she is so popular. And it is a swinging, groovy time.
Exactly. And while she's there, she meets Roman Polanski, who is going to film The Fearless Vampire Killers. Now, originally, he wants Jill St. John for the role.
Wow.
He wants a redheaded Jill St. John. And, you know, Rantoff, who is, you know, at this point still Sharon's, you know, agent, mm-hmm. tells him, oh, no, you know, you should go with Sharon. And Roman invites her to dinner at his house twice. And he just sits there and stares at her while she eats. Mm. Sharon talks about this and she, you know, thought it was a little bit odd, which I can't say I blame her.
Well, I hope she didn't have spinach in her teeth or something. My goodness, Roman, stop staring.
No, he looks at her. He never says anything to her. And he just looks at her.
I would
eating.
Be so freaked out.
Yeah, no, he didn't want to, you know, cast her. He's just, you know, doing that. So they have, you know, their second dinner. and he does absolutely nothing except look at her eat.
Oh, my God.
He does finally speak to her, and he takes her to his apartment. And according to Sharon, he lit some candles and excused himself and left her standing there alone. And then he comes out a little bit later, and he is storming into the room, and he's wearing a Frankenstein mask. And Sharon... I'm
sure. Well, you know, yeah. He kind of looked probably handsome.
Oh, yeah, no. Sharon screams, and she's crying, and then Roman calls Rance off and says, oh, she has the part. So that's Sharon's recollection of how she got the role.
Did you ever see that one? I never have.
It's interesting.
I love how that, when April's like, she'll say it's interesting. So
it's, yeah, it's...
do you think I should watch it, or is it like no fun? Because it's a comedy, right?
Yeah, I think you should watch it. But it's interesting. I don't think it's Roman Polanski's best work. We'll just leave it at that.
No, that was, yeah. Was that his like biggest budget one to start? Like that?
Yeah, I mean, his budget's obviously increased with each movie. So, yeah, at that point, that's, you know, like his biggest budget film. He takes nude pictures of Sharon on set, and there you run in Playboy.
Mm-hmm. Jay flew to England, I hear. He was still present in her life. He wanted to know what was going on.
Yeah, well, she ends up moving in with Roman after the completion of Fearless Vampire Killers. Mm-hmm. And that is when she, you know, calls Jay, who she's still technically with at this point. She calls Jay and she's like, hey, you know, I've met someone. Jay is devastated, flies out to London and befriends Roman. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the new Tarantino movie briefly covered this and said that Jay was, you know, knowing that Jay knew that Roman would eventually mess it all up if he wanted to be there for Sharon. That's a popular narrative.
Did you see the movie?
Have I seen the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. I've seen it twice.
I have to see it. Oh, boy. Yeah, so you really like it.
It's towards the beginning, so that's not spoiling anything. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's a fun movie. We'll just say that. It totally encapsulates the 1960s in a Tarantino.
Summer of Love, kind of.
Yeah. But, you know, and... Jay's just there. We'll say that. Roman says, you know, Jay looked at Sharon and himself as being a family. You know, Jay's family is Sharon. But regardless, Jay is very devastated, but he is friendly with the couple. And
he loves Sharon. You know, that's his friend, and he would protect her. I read that Jay was the inspiration for shampoo. Warren Babies.
He was. Jay, I can't think of a celebrity hairstylist today, given I don't really keep track of them, but I can't really think of one who would have like the influence that Jay had. You know, Jay would charge, you know, a ton of money for a haircut. You know, if you got in with Jay, you had it made. His salon was, you know, in the Hollywood area. It was very large. It was very luxurious. You know, he actually appeared on To Tell the Truth, obviously as himself. If no one has seen the show, there's three people. They all claim to be the same person.
Aha.
You know, they had to figure out which one was Jay, but, you know, which is kind of funny because you think they probably already knew who Jay was. But anyway, he goes off, you know, gives them their blessing. And Sharon and Roman really station themselves in London at this time.
Oh, isn't it Carnery Street, Cannery Street, something like that in London?
Yeah, Cannery Street.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Cannery Street was definitely the place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And Sharon and Roman were both there. They lived this very, you know, like hippie lifestyle. But Sharon does, you know, want to continue working, and she returns to Los Angeles to film Don't Make Waves, where she plays the part of Malibu.
What a lovely name. Is that the one with Tony Curtis?
Yes.
I saw it years ago. Probably about 10 years ago.
It was interesting. It also has Dave Draper in it.
She's just like the neighbor who pops in, right?
Yeah. He's gorgeous, the very hot muscular beach guy. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. Tony Curtis would say that Sharon had an exceptional body and an amazing face, that she was stunning. Tony Curtis, being Tony Curtis, does of course like to claim that they had something going on. I highly doubt it. Sharon, by all accounts, was head over heels for Roman.
Yes, and of course, like you said, after he said Marilyn was kissing Hitler, he said that he had something going on with Marilyn.
Yeah.
So I take anything, and there were so many things that he said in his biography. I take things he says with a total grain of salt. You know, maybe, but maybe not. And this one, I think maybe not. Definitely. Yeah. And with Marilyn, not, you know?
Yeah, no, it's pretty unlikely. Anyway, but Sharon plays Malibu. There is a very famous story about Malibu Barbie, which came out in the early 70s, being based on Sharon. I'm just going to say I would not be surprised.
Nor would I.
You know, and this is when she does her famous Copper Tone ad. She's on a surfboard with these four muscular men holding her up.
It's very Mae West.
Yeah, no, it is very Mae West. You know, and Sharon looks, again, absolutely stunning. She is very, very tan. She's very blonde. She's just gorgeous, gorgeous woman. So Roman, you know, has to keep working as well. So he returns to the U.S., and he is going to be making Rosemary's Baby.
Which I love. I love this film.
Yeah, everyone should watch Rosemary's Baby at least once.
Definitely. It's just so freaky because it's in New York. And it's like, who are you living next door to? And I totally believe it because I've lived in New York since I was 20. And it's like, who? Nothing surprises me anymore. Really. So, you know, it's actually feasible, but not exactly the whole movie. But I'm saying you could live next to God only knows, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. Nope. I like the movie a lot.
I like Rosemary's Baby. Roman, if I can think. Roman wants Sharon to play Rosemary, but he doesn't suggest her. And the reason he doesn't suggest her is he thought that, like, basically it would be rude if he requested Sharon to be into it. I don't know. Go figure. But anyway.
But nobody suggested it. So there you go.
Yeah. So he, of course, gets Mia Farrow, which I think Mia is pretty good for the part. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. I have my issues with Mia. My thing was John Cassavetes. Just like Jack Nicholson in The Shining, I found Cassavetes, and I love him, John Cassavetes, he's like a creep from the get-go, you know, he doesn't start, and you can see him that he would make a deal with the devil in a minute, you know. They wanted Robert Redford, and I thought, what a job, you know, because he's like Mr. Wholesome, but he didn't want to take the part because he didn't want to be seen as that bad guy like that. But I think somebody wholesome like him would have been making that turn would have been great between you and me and the lamppost.
Yeah, no, it really would have. But, you know, that's kind of Mia's thing now. It's kind of like Audrey Hepburn with Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Right.
You know, that's Mia's spotlight.
But what he was making that, wasn't Sharon making Valley of the Dolls?
She was. Sharon, that movie, Valley of the Dolls, would end up being released in December of 1967. Sharon played Jennifer North, who is a starlet.
Showgirl at first, showgirl. Yeah. Absolutely gorgeous. How shocking.
Yeah, she has a lot of issues, obviously, because it's Valley of the Dolls.
Dolls, drugs. That's what dolls are called.
Yeah, that's what pills are. They're dolls. Mm-hmm. They all need their dolls. Sharon actually relates to her character Jennifer quite a bit because people don't really take Jennifer's acting that seriously. Instead, they want to admire her body. Sharon, you know, can relate to that.
She becomes very good friends with the women. And what's her name? She becomes friends with Patty Duke and Anne. Barbara Parkins. And Barbara Parkins is her maid of honor when she marries Roman Polanski. But the movie, I don't know how did it do. Do you know? Did it just totally flop?
The movie
flop?
Was very successful.
The book was
extremely successful. The movie was successful, but it got completely roasted by critics. But, you know, people like to go see, I don't want to say trash because the movie really isn't trash, but people like to go see stuff like that, you know. People like to see, I don't want to even say blockbusters, but you know what I mean. They like to go see fluff movies, I guess.
Right. And you know what? As a kid, my best friend and I, now she lives in California and she did modeling and I wanted to move to New York and I did. And she did there. But we were like, we would watch The Valley of the Dolls when we were about 14 years old at late night in my bedroom. And we'd get like a dozen Dunkin' Donuts and just imagine our life. Give us dolls. And we were trying, you know, I was probably Neely O'Hara and she was Jennifer North, except brunette. But I love that movie, even though it's as, you know, it's like a camp classic now. And they did not get any big male stars. They got Paul Burke. I'm trying to think of who else. If we even know their names that I can't remember. And, oh, that poor guy. Come live with me. He had that horrible disease.
Yes.
Tony?
Oh, gosh. His name's like, yeah, Tony. And I can only tell you the women. Is not horrible? Because there's no leading man. It's just, it's a bunch of women.
Judy is supposed to be in that. And she did not come in or... What was it? Wasn't it based basically or on whom? Judy's character, Helen Lawson.
Yeah, so she's supposed to play Helen. She does go in for her costume fittings and stuff like that, but at this point Judy is very far gone. Very, very far gone.
Yeah, she dies a year or two later, right?
Yeah, she died in 69, the same year as Sharon.
Yeah.
And it just, it doesn't go well. We'll just leave it at that.
Susan Hayward comes in, does a good job. And you know what I think? She looked damn good with gray hair. I thought she looked stunning. Didn't she?
Yeah, no, she really did. Trevilla designed all of the costumes. My friend Elisa actually owns one of the costume sketches.
Ooh la la, which one? Oh, she has a sketch. Which one?
Mm-hmm. She has the black dress with the flats. She owns that sketch. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Who was that? Ann Wells? Barbara Parkins?
No, it's a Sharon sketch. Oh. And it's just, it's absolutely gorgeous. She owns that one. Like I said, Trevilla designed all of the clothing for it. Trevilla is obviously most known today for designing for Marilyn Monroe and I think six of her films off the top of my head. And Trevilla absolutely loves Sharon. He goes on to say that she is divine. She's a real find. Sharon has everything Marilyn Monroe had and more. She has a feminine strength. She's has a beautiful face, an exciting figure. She has, you know, great sex appeal and personality.
But she didn't have all the problems of Marilyn either, or the, I don't think she had the drive of Marilyn.
No, it was just, she was, you know, just going along, going with the flow. I mean, Sharon's like the ultimate hippie. Mm-hmm. She's a hippie with lots of money.
Can I ask you something? What was her with the critics? What did they say about Sharon?
You know, she actually received pretty positive reviews. It usually was, though, that she was in kind of stinker films.
Yeah.
But she received, you know, pretty positive reviews for the most part. Valley of the Dolls, like I said, it came out in December of 67. She then, before it came out, she had moved to London with Roman. And on January 20th, 1968, she actually married Roman in Chelsea, London.
But he didn't really want to get married, did he? Roman was a playboy. And I think one thing, and I don't like him, and I can say he did some great films, but I'm not really a fan of Roman's as a human being, that he, to give him credit, told Sharon, and prior to their marriage, that he was going to cheat on her. I love you, Sharon. No one can take your place, but I cannot be faithful to you. And she knew, and he pretty much told her that. Maybe she thought he'd change once they got married, but guess what? When someone tells you something, listen.
Yeah, he, I don't know how he could cheat on Sharon. We'll just leave it
guys
at that.
Guys are guys. Let's face it. You know, you have, like, you can't have steak every night. Then sometimes you want to have, you know, like, I don't know, shrimp scampi or something. You know what I mean? If they can get it, it boggles the mind. But it just doesn't, you know, look at all the beautiful women that were cheated on. And it's just something like that.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. And like you said, he cheats a lot. Sharon supposedly told a friend that Roman lies to her, and she pretended to believe him.
Well, I saw an article. No, I saw a documentary with about Sharon. And it was Elkie Summers was in this, and she did a film with Sharon, and she just, you could see the how much she detested Roman Polanski. And she didn't go into detail, but she said he was not good to Sharon. He was terrible to Sharon. Sharon would tell me things, and it was just not a happy marriage as far as Sharon was concerned.
Yeah,
although she loved him, it was not bliss for her.
No, she really struggled with it, and I can't say blame her.
No.
Roman, of course, had his own issues. Looking at it now, he probably needed a lot of therapy. His family was basically wiped out during the Holocaust.
Right.
You know, and he just had a bunch of tragedies throughout his life, and, you know, he needed therapy. We'll just say that.
And when Sharon told him she was pregnant, he was not happy because he never wanted to bring a child into this world because of his experiences of childhood.
Yeah, no. Sharon tries to settle down a little bit. Roman tells her, you want a hippie, not a housewife. Mm-hmm. So they move back to Los Angeles. They live at the Chateau Marmont for a little bit. Chateau Marmont for a little bit. And then they move into Patty Duke's home on Summit Ridge Drive. This is like late 1968 at this point. Mm-hmm. And in the summer of 1968, she had begun filming The Wrecking Crew, which, of course, had Dean Martin and Elkie Sommers, and she trained with Bruce Lee.
So that, yes, so did he, I read.
Yeah, no, it was, I can't imagine training with Bruce Lee.
Poor Bruce Lee, what another tragic story, geez.
Yeah, I know, it feels like everyone has a tragic story, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, Sharon just looks really amazing in it. She, you know, has her, like, mod outfits and everything, and she's going.
Go-go boots, all that stuff.
Yeah, no, she looks absolutely adorable in it. And there were talks of having Sharon star in another Dean Martin movie, but of course that didn't happen. So then she goes off, you know, she gets the Wrecking Crew finished up. She probably became pregnant. Well, I shouldn't say probably. She did become pregnant, you know, late 1968, you know. Mm-hmm. And as you brought up, she actually waited like 3 months to tell Roman.
It was 4 months because she didn't want him to say get an abortion. She waited four months. Yeah.
Yeah, no, she doesn't want to deal with that. And she goes and she films before, obviously, she's showing. She goes and she, well, let me back up. 1969 comes around, and on February 15th, Roman and Sharon move into 10050 CeeLo Drive.
Yikes.
Now, the previous tenants had been Terry Melcher and
Candace Bergen,
yeah. Terry Melcher is, of course, Doris Day's only child. And Terry has some shady connections. We'll just leave it at that.
And he was also a big-time record producer, though, as well.
He was, and he's just very shady. So they go into this house. Sharon loved the house. She called it like her love nest or something like that. Mm-hmm. She absolutely loves the house. But she has to go film 12 plus 1. And
that's Roman France, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Roman is going to go film Day of the Dolphin.
Oh, wow. I didn't know he did that one.
Yeah, no, it came out in 73 for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
12 plus 1 has Orson Welles, which is supposedly the main reason she wants to film it, because she can, you know, go with Orson Welles. Mm-hmm. So while they're gone, I'm not going to attempt to pronounce his first name, but it's Frykowski and Abigail Folger. Move Wojtek into CeeLo.
Frykowski and Abigail Folger. They were, he was Roman's pal, and he mm-hmm. met Abigail Folger, who was the heiress to the Folger Coffee Company.
Yeah, no. So they, you're right. They're dating and everything, and Sharon and Roman, if I can think of Roman's name, Sharon and Roman have Frykowski and Folger move into CeeLo while they're, you know, gone because mm-hmm. they want someone to be in their house, which, you know, makes sense. Mm-hmm. And Sharon sits there. She, you know, spends a lot of time in London with Roman. And then on July 20th, 1969, she returns to Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
On board the Queen Elizabeth II, because she obviously couldn't fly with how far along she is.
Right.
She's due like mid-August, and this is, you know, less than a month before.
And she was very bummed Roman didn't come with her, and she knew that he could have come with her, but he was having an affair with somebody. Sharon was allegedly having an affair with someone while Sharon was home.
Yeah, he, Roman claims he can't come because
of the film.
To finish up filming. But yes, there's other reasons he likely didn't come, but he is supposed to come on August 12th. So, you know, Sharon is eagerly awaiting the arrival of her child. And on August 8th, she has lunch with a couple girlfriends, and she, you know, complains about Roman not being there, which is understandable. Mm-hmm. And then that, she gets a call from Deborah and Patty asking if they can come spend the night. She tells them no.
On the ninth, yeah.
And that night she goes out to El Coyote with Jay, Frykowski, and Folger. And now I do want to say El Coyote has claimed a couple different booths as being the Sharon Tate booth. Mm-hmm. Actually, no one remembered her being in there. The only reason they remembered or were able to point out that she had gone to El Coyote was because of the reservation book. So we don't actually know where Sharon sat that night with Jay, but there's, you know, there's a rumored boof. I actually did not know that. It was my friend Elisa who told me. Elisa is like the Sharon Tate expert. And she's taken me to El Coyote a few times, and it's really good. I recommend that everyone go there at least once.
I've got to get to California. I have to go to the Turner Classic Movie Festival this year. That is just something I have to do. And yeah, I will visit El Coyote because I love Mexican food. And I also love kind of creepy, but, you know, interesting.
No, you have to get their tamales. Their tamales are just amazing. They're like green corn tamales. Oh my gosh, they're like, they're so sweet, they're so good. Okay, anyway, now they want El Coyote. But they returned that night at roughly 10:30 p.m. Sharon is reportedly actually quite grumpy. It's very hot that night. She is very pregnant, and she's just, you know, she's not in the best mood. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're sitting there, and I want to point out that the house, Sharon was being with Roman, they'd always had people who would like come in and out of their house.
Mm-hmm. They were very open, you know, kind of hippie, like, come, you're welcome anytime kind of people.
Exactly. So, you know, they're sitting there, you know, Sharon is in her back bedroom with Jay, just talking. Abigail is reading a book, and Furkowski is on the couch
watching TV.
On the couch watching TV. And then, of course, the Manson family arrives. It's Tex, Sexy Sadie,
Patricia Krenwinkel.
Yeah, I can never remember the lookout's name.
Oh, gee, and she's the one who got away with it. What is? I can't remember her name either. She's Linda Kasabian. Linda Kasabian.
Okay, yeah, I can never remember her name. I'm just like, oh yeah, that's the one.
Prior to them coming into Sharon's home. This poor soul, just like it all, it's all fate. It's all just wrong place, wrong time. Steve Parent had visited the gatekeeper. He was like a compute, you know, like stereo nerd. He would have been like probably big, could have been Steve Jobs for all we know. And he got murdered. He was sitting in his car, this poor kid, and he gets shot in the head by Tex Watson.
Yeah, Steven Parent is just really depressing. The whole thing is really depressing.
That's horrible.
And yeah, you're right. He was visiting William Garrison, who was like the groundskeeper. He lived in the guest house at the back of the property. Supposedly, you know, Susan, or Sexy Sadie,
who waves
at, she waves at Abigail Folger as she is walking to the back of the house to collect Jay and Sharon. And Abigail just kind of waves back at her because they're just used to people at the house. I'm not going to go into specifics. We'll just say it's very depressing what happens, and the whole group is murdered after midnight.
Brutally murdered. Sharon begs for her life, and she says, I don't care about your kid and that. But he was not touched. The child was a perfectly formed boy. Sharon had asked, let me have my baby. Take me and just keep me and kill me after I have my baby. She was just, I can't even fathom the evil and the horror that went on that night. It was just, it's unfathomable. That's why, you know, it's just so big, these people. Ugh.
Yeah. That's why I always sign the petitions when they go around to keep all of them in jail. You know, so yeah, it's a very brutal scene. The pictures are readily available online.
They are not attractive. They're horrible, and they will make you sick if you're not morbid, but ew.
Yeah, the first time I saw them, I was pregnant with David, which probably was not the best time to see them.
Heart-wrenching.
But anyway, they are, you know, the whole group is brutally killed. Sharon's maid, Winifred Chapman, finds the bodies the next day. William Garrison, the groundskeeper, is taken in for questioning. And, you know, he really is innocent. He doesn't know anything
about what's going on. But you know what, April, how did he not hear anything? Was he just afraid and he's hiding out? Did he not hear that?
You know,
people heard the screams and the shots in the canyon. How did he not? You know, they ran like Frykowski. He was like a Superman. He got all this stuff done to him, and he kept fighting and running and running. I don't get how this guy does not hear a thing. But if I were him, I don't blame him. I'd hide too. You know, I don't want to be brutally murdered.
No, we'll never really know on that. I don't know if he was scared. I don't know if he was like high and had fallen asleep.
Yeah, true. You
know, I think there's multiple factors, I think, on that. But regardless, we know that he didn't have a connection to the Manson family. We'll just say that. Sharon, you know, is autopsied and everything. Her baby is removed. He is placed in her arms. He is named Paul Richard Polanski. And Sharon is currently, and obviously in the past, was buried holding her baby. It's a very depressing case.
And that's why it is remembered. This is the 50th year later, and it is remembered, and movies are being made about it. And next night, they were killed, the LaBiancos. And what happened was Susan Atkins, Sexy Sadie, spilled the beans to a fellow lady convict, and she called, and she reported her. And Susan, you know, really readily blathered on about it all. And
Susan was crazy.
She was incredibly crazy. And it was gross. And she did. And all of them were convicted, and they got the death penalty. Tex Watson was extradited to Texas. This guy got to procreate. He has three children. He was married. He got, like, you know, they got prisoner. What do you call that? They can have sex.
Conjugal visits.
Three kids paid for by the state. They got divorced. He's still there. Leslie Van Houten, she actually got the parole board said, okay, she can get out, but it was vetoed by Governor Jerry Brown. She has never gotten out, nor will she ever. Patricia Krenwinkel decided not even to try anymore, and she hasn't. Susan Atkins died of brain cancer. They wanted to get a mercy release so she could die at home. That didn't happen. Charles Manson died, I don't know, 2 years ago. And what I think is just these poor, beautiful people were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. They wanted Terry Melcher. They didn't care who it was. Manson, he planned so much on being a superstar, a singer. And when Terry Melcher said, sorry, bud, everything clicked for him. I don't even believe it was about Black Power, because what did he believe about that? All he wanted to do was be a star. So I believe it was just vengeance, and it didn't matter who was in that house. He was going to kill them. They were going to get killed.
There is a story that goes around that Manson thought Terry was still there. That is absolutely not true. Manson had actually been to the house himself twice that we know of.
Voigtchuk, they said he, you know, did a lot of drugs, and he let a lot of people kind of in while Sharon was away. And she wasn't that happy about, you know, sort of the drug element hanging around her house as she is, you know, waiting to deliver a child. So who knows what happened there?
And another time, it was actually the pictures taken of when Sharon is very heavily pregnant. And I can't think of the photographer's name. They were really close. It's an Iranian photographer. But anyway, she was sitting there, and Charles Manson himself came up.
Really?
And he said,
he met her.
Yeah, well, he came up and the photographer came out, you know, went to the gate and he said, "Who are you?" And he said, "Well, I'm looking for Terry Melcher." And he said, "You know, Melcher doesn't live here anymore. This is the Tate Polanski house, you know, basically GTFO."
Yeah.
You know, like you need to get out of here. So that would have been a few days before the murder. And then reportedly, Terry Melcher received a letter, not like within days of the murder happening. It had just been dropped on his porch and he figured it was from Manson. So long story short, Manson most definitely knew, and Sadie admitted this as well in her thing, and it might have been text that corroborated as well. I can't remember the details on that, but you know, they corroborated as well that they knew it was Sharon Tate's house. They knew Terry Melcher and Candace Bergen weren't living there. In fact, Candace and Terry had split at that point.
But it didn't. I think the whole thing was it didn't matter. This was his revenge. He knew a house and it was going to be a big deal.
Exactly. So,
you know, it just breaks my heart for Sharon and for all of them. And poor Steve Parent and Jay, who tried to protect Sharon. And Wojtek and poor Abigail. I mean, they were just innocent bystanders in the wrong place at the wrong time. Terry, he went into hiding right after that. There was, you know, and people didn't know who was killing them. And there was this huge panic. Guns were bought by Hollywood people. They went into hiding. And it was just a horrible thing. And I guess, I don't know. How do we end this? Sharon was beautiful. She was kind.
She was patient.
Nobody in the world deserves this. But Sharon certainly did not. Pregnant at 8 months, excited about having her child. It's a heart-wrenching story. And it's not about Manson. It's about poor Sharon Tate and her baby and four other innocent people being killed because of some freako weirdo who just didn't get his way. And it's horrible, horrible. But we have the memory of Sharon, and we have photos of her beauty and of her kindness, words of her kindness. And, you know, watch your films. I do love Valley of the Dolls. What can I tell you? And what a bod she had. Right, April, do you have anything else to add to that?
No, I really don't. You know, I do want to point out that there is, you know, a group of people in Los Angeles who work very hard for Sharon's memory. Dearly Departed has a thing every year about the Manson stuff, and they give money to murder victims' families because of their fundraisers every year.
Which is wonderful. And also, they do things that they can confront the killers of their children. It's just a support thing that helps all these people who have been through deaths of their loved ones. And, you know, it is a wonderful charity. And Doris was amazing. And then Patty took up the cause, and she died of breast cancer at a very, very early age. And Deborah's still out there. Yeah, still
she
getting
is,
it.
Deborah was paralyzed. Well, I shouldn't say paralyzed, but disabled. Just so everyone knows, she wasn't paralyzed. She was disabled. Deborah was made disabled from a mail bomb.
Oh, gee, you're kidding me.
No, it wasn't actually the, like, plan. It was just sent randomly, and unfortunately, Deborah got it. So she is disabled because of that. That happened in the 90s.
Lovely.
And Deborah recently beat breast cancer. And
which I think that's what Patty died of.
Yes. And Deborah recently had an auction of Sharon, well, it was last year now, had an auction of Sharon's personal items. And, you know, Deborah has done so much for Sharon's memory, but she's really advocated for all of the victims. The Tate family is great. You know, they've always been great.
The LaBiancos have been there as well. And Deborah said today on TV, she said, once I'm gone, my children will be out there, and they will advocate. And these people will die soon. There will be nothing. They'll never get out of jail. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, we don't know what would have happened to Sharon. Would she have been a big star? In my eyes, she would have probably wanted to be a mom. I read this thing and or on something and said, oh, everything would have been different if Sharon lived. Roman would have had children with her, blah, blah, blah. That I kind of doubt, but we don't know. All I know is this beautiful woman, fate, by no fault of her own, was murdered when she was 8 months pregnant and 26 years old, along with three of her friends and this poor kid who just happened to be in the driveway, Steve Parent. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I don't think there's anything else to add. I think it's a horrible thing, you know, and the main thing I just want to add is that I really wish people would look into Sharon as a person instead of focusing on her as a victim.
Exactly, and that's what we tried to do here is to do, you know, she didn't have a huge career because guess what? She was 26. But many of the things just, okay, here's Sharon as a person, but then we're going to go right into Manson for about a half hour or something like mm-hmm. that. An hour. You know, no, this is about Sharon and her friends and Steve Parent and the loss of her child. Actually, there were six people murdered. Her child could have lived. He was perfectly formed 8-month-old boy. So, you know, it was awful. And God bless Sharon and all those people. That it was a horrible story. And she was more than the murder, and that's what she's remembered for. I guess that's the point we're trying to make. She was yeah. more than her murder.
Yeah, no, most definitely, Grace. I don't have anything else to add. You said it perfectly.
Okay, so thanks, you guys. And, of course, thanks, my darling April. And she will be back again to talk about another blonde, which I love. And then we are thinking next summer about doing, which I think is a great series, about children of celebrities and their books. And I think that will be a lot of fun.
No, most definitely. I'm looking forward to it, Grace. And as always, thank you for having me.
And as always, thank you for coming on. And thank you guys for listening. And I'll talk to you next week. Bye, everybody.